Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
When we hear about refugees on the news, it's usually bad news. Another protest at a detention centre, another death in custody, another boatload of asylum seekers being bounced around from place to place as governments and politicians debate their latest policies. But behind the scenes, there are plenty of good news stories too, as many good Australians work to make the lives of refugees a little better. Reuben Singleton is one of them. He's the International Head of Refugee Ministry for International Teams, an organisation that exists to serve the poor and oppressed. Reuben's working with refugees and has been for more than a decade and has many stories to tell, and he joins us now on Open House. Reuben, welcome.
Welcome. Good to see you.
It's great for you to join us. Thank you. How'd you first get involved with refugee work? What drew you to it in the first place?
Originally, I came to Australia in 2000 and to work for International Teams. And at the end of that year, we were asked to take over the work that was happening with refugees, to really build a team that was sort of growing and working with refugees and asylum seekers. And we ended up doing quite a bit of work in the detention centre in those days. And so it was a bit of a learning curve for us. We've not worked with refugees or asylum seekers before, but we just really felt that was where God wanted us to be serving. That's my wife and I.
So what is it about you or your life or your faith that so clicked with this kind of work?
Yeah, I guess meeting people who have been through so many challenges and, you know, understanding God's heart for every individual, you know, whether they be refugees or asylum seekers or, you know, whatever part of the world they're from, God's love was still there for them. And, you know, I just really wanted to share that love just on a very practical level with people that I met through that. And that was a real stirring of mine and, you know, really real passionate about that.
Yes. So. And this work is very practical. When someone comes out of detention and is given refugee status, what are their greatest needs?
Oh, look, there's a big network of support needed.
Yes.
You know, they get very little help, and that has changed over the last 10 years, depending on what policies there are in place. But like just helping to find accommodation and, you know, trying to find work and create sustainability for them in their lives is one of the hardest things. And also a network of support, which when they've come from a refugee community or a different culture, they've normally got that. But when they come into our culture and try and settle in and start a new life, that's pretty tricky.
I actually wonder where they'd be without groups like yours.
Yeah, well, I agree. We can't help everybody, and there are a lot of lonely refugees and asylum seekers in our communities today that are struggling, to be honest.
What sort of psychological or emotional struggles do they emerge with into our community?
Oh, depending on their journey before they got here, if they've spent a fair bit of time in asylum seeker centres, that's a big challenge, you know, a detention centre. A lot of the refugees that come have spent many years in refugee camps. You know, some families have spent over 20 years in those camps, and all the kids from, you know, 20-year-old down to zero were all born there. So to adjust to our life from what they've been experiencing is a huge challenge.
Which would cover the whole realm from psychological to just sheer physical needs.
Absolutely. And understanding how we do things, you know. You know, when somebody walks into a supermarket and sees a chicken and just buys it and eats it, you know, don't actually realize they have to cook it. You know, things like this, it's just a completely different context. And it does take people to walk alongside them to help them integrate and to understand how this life is different.
Often for quite some time. This is no quick fix, is it?
Oh, no, not really, not at all. And, you know, that's where I guess the work that we've done over the years has built relationship for a long term and walked alongside them, you know, for quite a while.
Do you identify spiritual needs of them?
Absolutely. I mean, we are a mission organisation in our work, and our real objective, I guess, is to help people practically to demonstrate and share the love of Jesus through all we do. And, you know, we, you know, take every opportunity to be able to pray for people in their times of need. And I don't think we've ever been turned down with that, no matter what culture or religion people are from. People really appreciate that. So, yeah.
So you're the global head of refugee ministry for International Teams. What kind of reach does the organisation have? How many people are you helping around the world?
Well, the organisation has 20 teams in different parts of the world, and they're in hotspots where refugees are travelling normally from one place to another. So junctions like Rome and Athens and different parts of Europe, there's teams there that are helping people as they travel, and they are displaced at that point, trying to find a place. And depending on what country they're in, refugees come through there and get, you know, varying degrees of help. So our teams are in those positions, providing, some of them providing things like food, accommodation, clothing, as well as, you know, trying to encourage them spiritually. And then a lot of those refugees will move on from there and end up in what we call end stations, which will be places like UK, Canada, the US, Australia. And this is where, I guess, there's more resettlement happening. So there's, we've got teams who are working as people move along the journey and as people finish and help with the resettlement side of things.
Can I ask you about the initial contact that you have with them? Are they suspicious? Because often they're very damaged people and therefore not very trusting. What's that initial contact like with them?
I don't think I've ever had anyone who's suspicious, to be honest. Yes. And the reason, I think, is because when people come to this country, no matter where they're coming from, they see this as a Christian nation. But to be honest, the reception they get is one of, you know, nobody really gives them the time of day and really wants to spend time with them. So for somebody just to turn up and say, hey, can I help you? Or I'll take you to the hospital today, you know, just
they
to
trust
help
you.
They trust us.
Yes.
And literally within a couple of times of meeting, most of them will almost take you into their family as far as, you know, relationally wise. They just love that, wanting to help them. And
I can only begin to imagine if I'm in that position and find someone in the midst of such uncertainty and such damage that's actually going to help me. What a powerful thing that is.
That's right. So it's very rewarding.
What would you say would be the hardest part of your job?
Oh, look, the hardest part, I think, is hearing some of the stories of what people have gone through.
Yes.
We cannot, most of us cannot even imagine, perhaps, what people have actually endured, been through. You know, a lot of people have seen people killed, slaughtered in front of them. You know, I think of one guy specifically who he fled out of one window and his family the other, and he's never ever seen his wife and children since. And he's had to live with that ever since. And, you know, and 12 years later, he's trying to rebuild his life, but never knowing whether they're dead or alive, you know, so.
Without being too political about this, but I feel I have to say this, it's a healthy corrective to the demonisation that we too often see of refugees. It's just they've just got that label, and no one really understands where they've come from or what they've endured.
That's right.
To make them a refugee.
That's right. I mean, nobody normally in their right mind will leave their home country just for the sake of it. And, you know, I've worked, as I said, for 10 years, and I've heard many, many stories, and the heartbreak that people live with is just probably unbearable for us to actually work through.
Yes.
And incredible people.
That's the hardest part of your job. What would be the best part?
I must say the best part is meeting these people, building a relationship, and actually just getting to love the broadness of culture and the, you know, just the beautiful things that come with different culture. I love, you know, we work a lot with different African communities, Middle Eastern communities, and they're just beautiful people. And I just love that, you know. And I think as I've worked with that, I've seen more and more how God loves these people so much, you know, in their differences, in their different cultures, different way they do things. God still loves them so much. And that is exciting to me.
It's another healthy corrective, I think, to the image of fear that we are sometimes encouraged to have of refugees who come here from other lands. A very different perspective.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I always challenge people to think, you know, what is God's heart towards these people? Because we think about the, you know, the over 40 million displaced refugees in the world. That's a huge number. But every single one of those people are loved by God and are really important. And I think that's my heart. And to meet some of them, just a handful, is just so exciting for
me. On Open House, we're with Reuben Singleton, who's the International Head of Refugee Ministry for International Teams. Reuben, can you think of a story that encapsulates why you do this work and what's so good about it and what's so necessary about it?
Yeah, there's lots of stories I could share, but one specifically, there's a guy from Sierra Leone who moved to a refugee camp in Guinea for a number of years. He came here with his family, with his children, without the rest of his family. The rest of his family were still in the camps in Guinea. And he was diagnosed with liver cancer, and got to know him before that, a couple of years before that, diagnosed with liver cancer. And here's a guy who has no support here. And so for me, I had the privilege of being his support person in hospital.
Yeah.
Walking with him through this journey. It was an emotional one for me as well as him. But just being able to almost, not physically, but, you know, walk alongside him, hold his hand through this situation. And I remember him saying to me, like 2 weeks before the operation, where he had his kids to take care of, he said, "I don't think I'm going to do the operation, which means I'll have about 9 months to live, but at least I'll get myself sorted out with the kids." And I said, "Well, look, no, there's a really good opportunity, good that this will turn out really well for you. I encourage you to do it. You know, we'll support your kids as much as we can through it." And he's come through that operation. He's come through that trusting God more, because we prayed a lot for the situation. And, you know, he's doing really well, and it's very exciting. And then since that day, some of other members of his family have arrived from the refugee camps in Guinea. And this is another exciting part of this. His journey, he's learned to trust God more and more. And he said to me the other day, he said, I want to get some people behind me to go back to Sierra Leone and actually start to build churches and schools in some of the slum areas. And, you know, and he wants to do this to actually give back to help others who were in a situation like he was in his country. And I think he's just really appreciated God being on his side and having people to support him through his tough time here, you know. So
I keep on thinking, as we've been talking, imagine if I was in that kind of position.
Yeah, I don't know that we could, but, you know.
No. So your contact is often long-term with them.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it's not, again, just a flash in the pan.
No. And I think that's an important part of the work, and partly because a lot of people have come from broken relationships or people who have died or being displaced. To come here and have somebody say, "Oh, I want to help you for 3 months," and that's it, that really is another form of rejection. And and so for us to be able to maintain friendships long term, I struggle trying to fit everyone in, you know, because it's lots of friends, and they, you know, part of their community almost. So.
Yes, a lot of people wouldn't be aware that they may have refugees living in their community, in their suburb. They're just not all in one area,
In
one kind of ghetto, which is again how they are perceived.
Yep.
And it's okay that they're out there in the community.
That's right. Yep. I mean, there's lots of different refugee communities that you wouldn't recognize as being refugee communities very often. And, you know, people that have walked those journeys are all over the place, in all of our neighborhoods, I'm sure.
Yes. What would you hope that individual people and churches would do or be for the refugee community from seeing this at the coalface?
Yeah, I think as Christians, we have an opportunity and I guess a responsibility to, you know, show love to these people in a very practical way, go out of our way to make a difference in their lives. And that could be as simple as just talking to people, welcoming people on the, you know, as you walk down the street, you know, because actually that's not difficult, but it maybe is not part of our culture.
No, certainly not.
I remember one good friend of mine from Africa said to me, he said, one of the most impacting things for him when he first arrived was he was walking down the street and somebody, an Australian lady, actually looked at him in the face and smiled. And that implies that actually that doesn't normally happen.
Yes, sad.
Do you know what I mean? And, yes. and in the cultures that they're part of, you know, communication and friendship is a huge part. So to come to this non-friendly Christian nation, you know, as Christians we can help in so many different ways.
Yes.
That being one, but also just getting involved, visiting families, you know, if you want to meet families, welcome them into our community.
If there are people listening tonight, and I'm sure there probably are, what could they do or where could they go to help that? How could they make that first step, do you think?
There's several different ways. I mean, if you're in a community where you know there's refugees, and you know, there's certain different ways that you can seek them out and get involved. The other way is you can always come onto the International Teams website. It's at www.iteams.org. And on there, there's a link to the Sydney Refugee Team. And these guys help train volunteers to then go and meet and visit families, to be able to help them out practically. And there's a great deal of support from the team that are running that. But again, it gives you a practical way to get involved with families, get to know some of these people that perhaps we've had fears about. There's certainly a network of other church ministries that are working with refugees in all other cities, and we can certainly point you in the right direction if you're in other areas as well.
So the other way people could help is this Ride for Refugees. Tell us about that.
Ah, yes, Ride for Refugees. This is something that we've done for the last 2 years, and it's a way of getting out and making a difference. You know, we're encouraging people to pull out their bicycle, even if it's a bit rusty and dusty.
Blow up those tires.
That's right, blow up those tires. And it's something that people can gather their friends. It's a fundraiser, and the funds that are raised end up going to help work with refugees both here and overseas in some of the different ministries. And so we're really trying to encourage people to do something practically. Get on your bike. It's on the 3rd of September. And there's a 25 kilometers if you can cope with it, or you can do 100 if you like. Okay. But yeah, the idea is that it's going to be a great way to build awareness, get some people on their bike. Even you might want to jump on your bike,
Lee, on your
and
bike.
Join us. But
and where does the money go? It's probably an important question to ask.
Yep.
Okay. I participate. I support this. So where's the money go?
The money goes to different refugee works of either international teams or other ministries. Now, that we've got a very significant thing that anybody who's riding, a church, for instance, if they've got a refugee work that they're supporting here, or if they've got their own refugee work overseas, they can apply for a Ride Partner grant. So then money that they raise, 50% of that can be channeled into that project.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a something that we can use as a tool to help people with their ministries. And then what's left over, obviously we need to cover the event costs, but then what's left over then goes distributed around the world to other key partner grants and other ministries overseas as well. So as much of it as can will go to refugees themselves and the work.
Well, this is such an issue that has been so politicized, I think sadly, for so long. So, Reuben, it's been a great opportunity to talk with you and find out about this work. And again, the website, if people want to find out more information or help, what is that again?
That's rideforrefugees.com.au.
And iteams.org.au as well.
That's the organisation we work for,
and we'll put that up on our Facebook page. Reuben Singleton, thank you so much for joining us on Open House.
Thank you, Lee. Thanks a lot.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.